The following program has been pre-recorded.
Ron and Anian.
I was a little annoyed with ASE because they sent out an email this week talking about doing a webinar for mechanics 4 o'clock on a Friday afternoon. That's the witching hour. You don't do anything at 4 o'clock on a Friday afternoon except get the cars done and go home.
The car doctor.
If they tried hand cranking it and it doesn't move, they're saying it's seized. You know, at 200,000 miles, you start to lay out the dollars, you know, in your head.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, the car doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
Welcome aboard. You know, if our first guest this hour, how do I introduce this gentleman? It's I'll say it like this. If the car doctor's been working on cars since dirt was invented and God was young, this guy was on the other side of the sandbox throwing dirt right back at me because he was right there doing it too. Chris Lewis, Director of Training, Automotive Training Group. Chris, welcome aboard, sir.
How you doing, Ron?
All
Thanks
right.
for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. Listen, it's been a while. I think we know each other, 35 years? And I think you've been on somewhere along the way, but it's been a while.
Yeah. It's been a while, but I've been on before. Yep.
You are Director of Training for the Automotive Training Group, a national training organization for mechanics, and I couldn't think of anybody more qualified to come up here and talk to us today about, well, some of your training experiences. But I wanted to center a little bit about ADAS, Advanced Driver Assist mm-hmm. Systems, because it's fast becoming, well, my opinion, my perspective, and then we'll get yours, Chris, of course, it's fast becoming an industry hot button, right? What is it about that? What can you tell us?
Well, first, let's explain what ADAS is.
Okay.
Some people might have heard the terminology. I know of some of my students have never heard that. But it stands for Advanced Driver Assist Systems. And the one that I think most people would understand is you put the car in reverse and there's a camera, so you don't hit anything. Other systems they're familiar with are blind spot detection, like if there's a car in the lane next to you, the light goes on in your mirror or something to that effect. And then it gets a little more advanced with lane departure warning, adaptive cruise control, forward collision warnings. And these systems have been around for every bit of 10-plus years on cars today.
Yeah.
So
absolutely, and you'll see them. You know, a lot of people think, well, it's only on newer cars. I think Mercedes had it starting back 08, 09. Right? Wasn't it that far back, or maybe 10?
No, it was back that far. It was back that far that they've had some version of the system. Some people might not realize that it's there. It's part of ADAS, but it's a summary. It's a title that the industry has given it for all these different things, and even the commercials where the car parks itself. It's all based upon the same principles, and it's changing the way mechanics have to look at the repair and the way the automotive, the consumer's got to look at repair.
And everybody wants this, right? Well, a lot of people seem to want it, but now the problem is becoming, it's mandatory, absolutely mandatory to follow procedures, because the least little thing will upset the apple cart, so to speak. Incorrect wiper blades, Chris and I, right? We were talking about this during the week before the show when we were talking mm-hmm. about this show, right? How can a wiper blade affect an ADAS system?
All right, so if you put on the wrong size wiper blade, and what we mean by that is one that's too long, or longer than it should be. And most people look at their front windshield from the outside looking in, they're going to see it's a camera above where their rear view mirror mounts. And that's looking for obstacles in the road. If you, depending on the systems you've got, it could be for collision avoidance. It could be adaptive cruise control. The lane departure, that camera could be looking at the white lines and could be obscured when the wiper is on. And the camera is focused, and all of a sudden it's out of focus, it's in focus, and then you get a message on the dash. And that could be a tough diagnosis for a technician who didn't realize he just put on a one-inch too big wiper.
And maybe it's a result of, maybe it's not even his fault, but that brand hasn't held, you know, mm-hmm. maybe it's a cheap wiper blade, let's say it like that. And the manufacturer doesn't follow that exact blueprint from the original equipment, and now all of a sudden, Chris, it doesn't have to be an inch, right? A quarter of an inch long wiper blade. If it's in the camera sweep, the game's over.
Right, and sometimes it doesn't have to quite be in the camera sweep. It could be just enough for that camera to be slightly confused. And just to give you an idea, when we talk about these systems and when technicians have to set these things up and make adjustments, we are down to 0.1 degree accuracy.
Wow.
So, yeah, wiper blade can definitely, and there's not a lot of common problems with wiper blades. It's just something as simple as a wiper blade. One area I think that's going to be more simple for mechanics and technicians is when you pull, sometimes you pull a headlight or a rear parking bulb, a directional bulb, you might have to lower the bumper down a little bit. Behind those bumpers could be radar units that if they get disturbed, they have to be realigned.
And all of a sudden, that simple bulb replacement, that $20 bulb replacement, whatever it might be, if the bumper's got to come down, it's obviously a little bit more. But all of a sudden, now you're into a calibration procedure that could be a couple of $300, right?
Yeah. And the point that, you know, you and I spoke about this quite a few times, the point that I'm concerned with when I go out and teach this subject is more to the tune of, let's not be the cause of the customer's problem. You know, these are safety systems. They're there to help us and keep us safe on the road. I don't want us to do a simple job and even a simple wheel alignment, and the next thing you know, one of the safety features isn't working properly. And then I got to, you know, I'm liable for getting it fixed properly or aligned, and I might not have the equipment, and I got to send it out. And you know what? The cars have changed. These safety systems are pretty cool. They make us safe, in plain English. I got a lot of these features on my new F-150. And like I said, you know, when it's time to do basic work, just got to be a little more careful and more educated.
Well, one of the things you and I have really agreed on over and over the years is we really take somebody's life in our hands working on their car, and there is no place for a shortcut. And now with the safety systems, to not do proper procedure is asking for a problem, and we're creating the issue. We're defeating what we're trying to do to make something safe. Because like you told me, Chris, and you know what? I couldn't agree more. It's like you always say, it could be your mother in that car. It could be your grandmother in that car. It could be your kids in that car.
Mm-hmm.
They've got to be safe.
Well, it goes back to simple brake jobs and set of tires.
Right.
Do you want to put on something that's very, very inexpensive but might not stop quickly or properly enough? God forbid you need to do a panic stop. Are the tires going to be able to handle, you know, true rough road condition? You know, you're more the tire expert than I am, but no, you know, and I really think that, then again, this is something you and I have talked about a million times. The consumer wants their car returned and to have it safe and reliable to put their family in. I mean, I can remember for years people would come in like July and early August and say, can you go over the car? My son's taking it off, or my daughter's taking it off to college.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got to be safe. So, you know,
right.
who needs that ADOS training class, Chris? Because by the numbers, are you filling the class? Are you guys having good success? Or is it like pulling teeth?
I think training in general sometimes is more like pulling teeth. People don't know what they don't know, meaning technicians.
Right.
You know, some technicians struggle with their diagnostics and even non-ADIS systems, and they don't realize there might be an easier way or a different way. We try to say easier or more efficient, which helps everybody involved. And a lot of technicians aren't aware of what ADOS stands for, and you really can't advertise all the different crazy systems. A lot of people tell us that, well, we don't work on them. The customer doesn't come in with a rear camera not working. They don't come in with a blind spot system not working. And that's not what it's about. It's about that, you know, you accidentally hit a mirror backing out of your garage. Everybody's done that. And it needs a quick, simple mirror. It's a 15-minute to put it on. But there could be a radar system or camera in there working with the blind spot or with the any sort of other safety issue.
Right.
And if it's not dealt with properly by the technician, then will that system work? I mean, I don't know. And if every car is going to be its own little animal. But, you know, like anything else, technicians need to learn that these car technology is changing at unbelievable pace. I mean, what is it, another half hour from now, they're going to release the Ford F-150 all-electric vehicle?
Right.
That's going to be in everybody's base soon.
Yep. Sure. Listen, we talk about how things change and evolve. When we come back, let's talk about something that everybody has to go through usually once in the life of a vehicle, a windshield replacement. How has that changed? Right. How could, Chris, it's a clear piece of glass. How could changing a clear piece of glass affect the ADAS system. Hold that thought. Yeah. I can hear it in your head already, my brother. Let me pull over and take this pause. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We're here with Chris Lewis, Director of Training for ATG, and we're talking about ADAS. We're glad to have him, and we're glad to have you here with us. We'll both be right back after this. Don't go away.
It on the wall so you don't forget to call for car advice done right. 855-560-9900. Now, back to Ron.
Hey, let's get on back to Chris Lewis, Director of Training, Automotive Training Group. Chris, when we pulled away for the pause, we were talking about windshields, right? How hard could it be? What could possibly be so involved in replacing a piece of clear glass? And then along comes ADAS systems, right? Advanced Driver Assist. Now what happens?
That's a great one because I actually taught this class on Saturday and had a couple of service advisors. Because most shops don't change the windshield themselves. They call it a glass company. And number one, when you remove the glass, you're going to have to remove the camera from behind it. So, okay, so now the camera goes back in. And again, we're talking 1/10 of a degree accuracy in some applications. So is it sitting 100%? And I'm not a glass expert, but the clarity of the glass can make a big difference. And not me personally, but when I do my research and I talk to people and people that do this on a regular basis, the calibrations, they say that some of the aftermarket glass companies have had problems. Not the company itself, the quality, the glass manufacturer.
Right. The clarity of the glass is an issue.
Right. Right. And they have to go back to OE. We've got a couple of case studies and information from other mechanics students of ours where like window coatings and tinting. Somebody likes to tint their windows or some of the coatings you can get out there that so it repels water better when it rains, things to that effect have been a little bit of a concern. And right. It's not a problem yet. It's just something that if I have a vehicle and I have a problem with anything with the ADAS system and it's had a recent work on the windshield or any kind of coating or tinting, it could be a safety concern.
So the listeners really have to be aware if all of a sudden they're replacing a piece of glass, if they've got a camera, if they've got certain levels of ADAS, if the manufacturer calls for it, they've got to do the calibration. We had a call about 6-7 months ago from a listener in Florida that I think I told you this story. The woman had her Subaru, had the windshield replaced by the dealer. Mm-hmm. And the dealer said, we have to do a calibration. And her husband said, no, I don't need that. I'd hate to be this guy because after talking to me, long story short, I explained to her that it's got to get calibrated. She had the ADAS system calibrated and called us back the next week and said, my car's fixed. My husband's in a lot of trouble. It's different. Everything is different now. And even using a factory piece of glass, it may require calibration. So for the shop that says, I don't need ADAS training, I don't work on that system, I guess you're not doing windshields anymore. I guess you're not doing side view mirrors anymore, right? You're limiting what you can do on the car. It's everywhere.
Sure. I mean, we can go into the scenario of replacing tires. If you go to an oversized height-wise, that could throw the angle of the radar and the camera off. Wheel alignments, any major adjustment that's needed, or we call it thrust angle, or the tracking of the vehicle. Everybody's seen me driving down the road, and it looks like the car in front of you is going crooked.
Right.
The camera and the radar are not pointing in the proper direction. And this, just simply think of ABS many years ago. When do you find out if your ABS works?
Oh, usually when you need it.
Correct. And unfortunately, with some of the ADAS stuff, it could be the same thing, that you're expecting, to... shift goal to switch lanes and you turn your directional on and there's no blinking light in your mirror, so you think it may be safe because you're so used to the blinking light telling you it's safe,
right?
And it's not.
Right.
And you said if someone never wants to get involved in the calibration of the shop himself, a technician itself, I mean, it's fine. It's a large investment. It's a lot of knowledge, but understanding what these systems are and how it affects pretty much every person working on a car today, that you said it before, a simple taillight, a simple headlight. We get into timing chains or radiators or air conditioning condensers where sometimes you got to remove the grill and that's where the radar sits. Windshield, we mentioned, you know, there's just so many little variables, and it's not a scare tactic, but the cars have changed. They're a lot safer. They last longer. We have to change the mindset from the technician side and the consumer side. These systems are here to stay. It's the, let's say, the beginning phases of the self-driving vehicle, which is probably another 5 to 10, maybe 15 years down the road, in my opinion, but this is the start of it. So the answer to the question, anybody who works on cars should be aware of ADAS and what it really is and all these system things, cross-traffic alert, automatic. I mean, my F-150, if you walked in front of my truck, it stops on a dime, and I ain't even touching the brake. That's, you know, pedestrian, a warning and pedestrian avoidance. That's a great system.
Chris, when ATG develops a class, can we talk about that? We've got about 3 minutes left. What you know, this isn't something you sit down and write this class in 2 weeks. What does it take to develop a class on all of them, but ADAS in particular? You've been working on this for months.
Well, technically, to let you know how it goes, I'm going to give Tim Flannery, he's a CEO of ATG, and he probably spends every bit of 4 to 5 months doing nothing but researching, getting his hands on cars. Sometimes he'll go to other shops. He flies around the country and go to shops and see what they're experiencing and work on those cars and just get a feel of not just what the car manufacturer says or what you can read online or Google, you might say. This is a lot of real-world stuff. And then he presents it to me between the proofreading, and we kind of split the PowerPoint responsibilities. And then I go and I teach, and right now up to 9 different trainers. And then the trainer goes out and tries to verify, yeah, you know what, Chris told me this, or I read this, and I'm not 100% sure, so let me go down to John's or Ron's shop, and Ron, let's go look at, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
It takes a lot, because if what you learned from ATG or our books was the same you read online, why would you need us?
Right, right. Well, that's one thing that ATG has always done. You've always given the mechanics the good information, but also real-world scenarios and how to deal with it. And I think that's really what the mechanics are going to need, the technicians, we'll call them that, are going to need today, because ADAS is everywhere. You know, the fuel injection systems are changing. The transmissions are changing. It's, you got to look at the entire package. And one of the great things that ATG does is you always break it down into simple terms. We talk about Ohm's Law, right? You know, we can't fix Ohm's Law. Like you and I always say, guys are still learning about OBD2. Some of them can't spell it, and the system's only been out since 96. What is that, 96, 2006?
Yeah, 25 years.
And they're still learning what's freeze frame and what's mode 6. Chris, as always, a pleasure. Where can the listeners get more information? Real quick.
AutomotiveTrainingGroup.com.
All right, listen. We'll talk during the week again. As always, great to have you, and you stay well, my friend. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We're back right after this. Don't go away. Welcome back, Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor. You know, I want to start off this segment by saying thank you to everybody out there listening today, because we're going to take a national show, which is what this is, and bring it down to a very local level. There is a group of individuals in Waldwick, New Jersey, that every year for the past umpteen years have dedicated their time and resources to something I think that is so important, preserving a piece of American history is how this started, that being the Waldwick train station. And it started off by trying to raise funds by creating things that people would enjoy doing. And now the Waldwick Car Show, which is going to be the weekend of June 6th, if I'm correct, and our guest will correct me if I'm wrong, has grown into a regional phenomena. And without any further ado, let's welcome Chuck Wanamaker Sr. to come in here and tell us all about it. Chuck, welcome aboard, sir. Thanks for taking the time today.
Yeah, no problem, Ron. Thank you for considering me. That's very nice.
Oh, well, we always enjoy talking to Junior, and I think Junior was, he's getting to be a little bit of a ham, so we have to give it to Papa this year and get your perspective on it, because both of you guys just do such a great bang-up job. We're just happy to have either one of you. The summer cruising season's opening up, right? The pandemic's ending. Cruising, right? It's really part of the American landscape. Why is that, do you think?
I think it just goes back a long time ago. When we started fooling with cars we thought would never end, and it's just gotten to where now they almost come to an end with everything being so modern. But then guys, just holding on to that old car situation, what they had with their dad, just as I did. And I don't know, it's just one of them things. You guys, in your blood of what you really enjoy doing, having a different idea of a car, things you could do to it. It'll never leave. I'm sure it's going to be around forever.
What was your first car, Chuck?
A 1956 Ford Victoria.
And what did you do to it? Do you remember?
Yeah, it was just one of the things. It was a 312, so you fool around with three deuces on it. That was your biggest thing, instead of, Continental mufflers and all that kind of stuff to make it sound good. It was all that kind of cool stuff
right.
that we enjoyed. Just really enjoyed the heck out of that stuff.
You don't have your first car, do you?
I do, but it's not the original.
Do
have a 56 Ford Victoria,
right.
and it has two four-barrels on it. But I do have it. It's not the original one, but I do have a 56 Ford Victoria.
So is that what the car show is about? People walking down memory lane and seeing that car, that first car maybe, that's similar to what they had, and it just generates conversation and recall, memories
absolutely.
For them?
Absolutely. Yep, absolutely. No doubt about it.
You see it every year. The Walter Car Show has been going on how many years now?
Just our 13th year doing it.
And,
we've been very successful at it. For somebody that didn't know much about car shows, we did.
you get a quick education, right?
Right.
And it started out not as just a car show. It was another piece of Americana that you guys were trying to preserve.
Right. Yep, that was the train station.
The train station. Yeah, and why was the train station so important? It's just a building, Chuck, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's just part of what was going on in history at the time of where it all began. A little train station in the town of Waltwick. It was just where you had a little stove there. Everybody would keep warm in the wintertime to get their ticket for the train and things. And it was just a little piece of history that was a shame to see go down the tubes.
Right.
And that's where it was going.
Simpler times. Right. And, maybe in the crazy world of today, we need simpler times. And maybe that's the attraction for the train station, for the car show, for everything that goes on there. Right.
I believe so. That's why I believe the same way you're thinking. It really makes people. That's the train station. Where's it's at the train station? They don't forget it. That's for sure.
Right. nothing bad happens at car shows per se. Right. At your car show, you see more and more families come out. Right. They bring the kids. And the kids sit there, and they're wide-eyed at the chrome on the cars, and everybody has a story about where that car came from or what that car means to them, and it generates a lot of good bonding for families, right?
Oh, absolutely. And then they talk about it. They say, "Oh, yeah, that's the kind of car my dad had," and it's all that kind of stuff comes to head about that, and it just goes on and on about I had that car one time. I remember that car, and I wish I had that car back. And the kids go. They go kind of crazy with that with their dads and their moms, too. They jump in.
And it creates some bonding. It's not everybody's on their phone pushing buttons.
No, right. Phones. Only to take pictures. That's about the most best part of the phone at this point in life is they take beautiful pictures.
Right. What's new at the car show this year? What can the listeners, if the listeners are here in the New York, New Jersey area, the weekend of June 6th, right, Chuck? That's the date, June the 6th?
Right. This is Sunday.
Yeah. What can the listeners expect? What time does the show start? And what might they see? What were some of the cars last year that stuck in your mind? Well, was there a show last year? Last year was the pandemic.
No, actually, we couldn't take the chance, and we were afraid to do it, so we canceled it for last year.
Right. So the previous year, what were some of the cars that stood out in your mind?
Well, there were a couple of ones that really come to view as the people that are, this is really right from the heart of what we think about a lot. There was a handicapped guy there that pulls up with a motorcycle and a tag and a trailer behind it, all built by himself in a wheelchair.
Wow.
Those are the kind of things you just, you can't make that up.
Right.
This is what it's all about when people bring that stuff. And that one sticks in my mind because you just see what this man did. It was phenomenal.
Right.
It's just great. And then the little cars that we get there, different. You go from a little hot rod to a $250,000 Ferrari or something that comes to it, and just these things stick out unbelievably well.
Because everybody should understand, this isn't just it. This started when this show started. It was in the train station parking lot, right? Now you guys, you take over the streets, right? It's overflowed the parking lot. That corner of the town gets shut down, and there's cars parked everywhere up and down Houston and out towards Prospect and the train station, and you're working your way up the side streets. The show just seems to get bigger every year.
Yep, it does. And we do take over about four of the side streets with the permission of the township.
Right.
And it's gone overwhelming, actually, because we're kind of laid back with it. We don't give anybody any hard time, and guys love it, because we offer the entertainment. We have the stage there with the Elvis guy, and we have the School of Rock. We have the Odell Brothers with their band. I mean, and we also have our beer garden. It makes everybody happy, and our food trucks. It's all good.
There's something there for everybody. Oh, and the food trucks with the hot dogs and everything else and all the food that they serve. So, always a good time. Let me ask you this question real quick. I know Chuck has a small car collection. What's new in the car collection this year? What do you really like? And why did you buy it? I'm just curious. And the listeners always seem to want to know this too.
Yeah, all right. Well, there was two, actually. And we actually ended up with the Hulk Hogan car, which is a Viper. And it's his car that we ended up with. He does a thing called the 50 legs for kids that have, he makes these prosthetic legs. So we just got into a little idea with that and ended up with helping him, and we got his car. That was one of the best things that ever could happen in our life, to help out something that was really worthy. And then the other thing that we had purchased this year was a 56 Chevy pickup from one of our customers, basically, that did it from the body off restoration, and he's had it for like 30 years, and he didn't want nobody to grab it. He didn't want to be, just figured he'd like to see if he could put it with our collection, and that's what we did. And 350 with a 4-speed, all the fun stuff that we all like to see and enjoy and drive.
Right. When you started in the business, Chuck, and you've been doing this longer than me. You've been in a while, brother. Did you, with 312s and 3 deuces and 2 4-barrels and how mechanical it was, did you ever think you'd see such an electronic age of the automobile?
No, never did. It actually was one of them things, just probably as you well know too, that when it all started coming along, said, all right, we don't need that.
Right.
We don't need that.
Right. And now it's just, you can't describe the automobile industry to anybody. You say you have to be in it and live it. And I think that applies to cruising and hot rods as well, right?
Yeah. And some of that technology became very worthwhile for the cruisers, because you took what went pretty good, now it goes fantastic.
Right. Right. Hey, listen, Chuck, the weekend of June the 6th, that Sunday, if the listeners want more information for our local affiliates that are going to, that are airing this show live this weekend, where can the listeners get more information? There's a website somewhere?
Yeah, yep. There's www.waldorfcommunityalliance.com.
Okay. And if they can't find that or they forget it, all they have to do is think of the town of Waldwick, New Jersey, June the 6th. The show starts what time?
They start showing up around 9 o'clock.
Okay.
I mean, they sometimes they're earlier than that, but we kind of tell everybody they start around 9, but they're usually there in time a little way before that.
And it runs till what?
About 3 o'clock, 3:30 in the afternoon.
So a great Sunday, and hopefully the weather's as good as it has been in the past, and you guys will have a good turnout.
It's a good day to get away and have a good time with no grief.
Right, and we all need that, right? We all need a little de-stress, and maybe that's a stress-free weekend event with family. Chuck, as always, a pleasure. We're glad to have you, and we'll catch up again during the week, you and I. Thanks again.
Thank you, Ron. Thanks very much.
You're very welcome. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We are back right after this. Don't go away.
I got my first real six-string. My fingers bled. Was the summer of 69.
Me. Welcome back. Ron Nanny, the Car Doctor. Once again, thanks to Chuck Wanamaker. And if you're free next weekend or the weekend of June the 6th, not next weekend, get out to the Waldwick Car Show down there. And you might see the Car Doctor sneaking around. You never know who's going to show up. I'll be the guy wearing the mask. Ha ha. I want to talk about Frank's car. Frank is a listener from South Jersey who sent me an email this week. Ron, my nephew has a 2009 Mazda 6 with 93,000 miles. He's had all kinds of problems with check engine lights, key fobs not working, and poor gas mileage. He took it to a reputable shop here in South Jersey who said they believe the problem is in the main computer, and they recommended that he get rid of the car because even replacing the computer doesn't fix them. They told him that they chatted with Mazda, who told them that this was a problem on these vehicles and there was no guarantee of a solution. He called Mazda directly, and they advised him the diagnosis would be $600 and likely the repair over $3,000 with no guarantees. As a software developer, this seems so odd to me and wrong. It seems that no one wants to fix the car. I believe that with a little work and a direction, it can be fixed. The car is very nice and otherwise well taken care of. What I'm thinking is that the computer could be repaired and put back in the vehicle. Do you have any experience with these vehicles and unreliable computer issues? Also, do you or have you used any of the repair services such as this one? And he sends me a link for a computer repair service. Your guidance would be appreciated. Thanks, Frank. You know what, Frank? I think everybody's taking the wrong approach for diagnosis here. I'd love to know what the fault codes were. I'm going to assume it's a P0600, which has gotten to be a common Mazda 6 fault. That is an internal error inside the PCM. It puts the vehicle in limp mode. We've seen this a few times. The biggest problem you're going to have is the key fobs. If the key fobs require programming, that's difficult in the aftermarket world, and that's you need a locksmith license and some various other legislation to get through that. But let's talk about the problem with the check engine light and the computer. I don't understand the $600 diagnosis. I would call another Mazda dealer and ask them, hey, listen, I've got a vehicle with check engine lights, key fobs not working, just like you describe it. What is the diagnosis? Where does that start, and what could this possibly be? And I would get a second opinion. Here's a case where I would get a second opinion, because you've got no relationship with any of these guys, and you're walking in with this cold, hardcore drivability problem. So it's a question of, let's talk to a few more people. I think this is a good vehicle to do some research. I agree. It's 12 years old. I'd be worried about rust. If there is none, get a good look at the vehicle overall. But I think before you condemn this car and just write it off, you need more diagnostic information and some more testing before they can make this determination. I would ask, think back in memory, has this car been in the family or has he owned it since new? Could you possibly be dealing with a wiring harness issue? I've seen that affect these computers and create the P0600. Could you be dealing with a wiring harness issue from an accident that wasn't properly repaired, and that might lead you down the wrong path? As far as getting the computer repaired, listen, it's worth the try, provided you get to that point in the diagnosis. Keep in mind, this could also be a problem with PCM or engine computer connectors. That's a problem or a possibility as well. Call me back, or call me with information, or send me an email back. We can go over this further if you need more help. Glad to do what I can for you. 855-560-9900. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor. I'll be back right after this. Welcome back. Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor, winding things down this hour. A recent report came out at the beginning of the month from the Federal Trade Commission. The FTC jumped in, talking about the right to repair. It seems that all the claims, or not all the claims, but some of the claims by the automotive aftermarket have been true. Look at that. That the automotive manufacturers are creating monopolies and monopolizing and restricting repairs by not providing correct and enough information. And I hear rumors from time to time of different manufacturers that aren't following the guidelines. But this article went on to point out, the report summarized the problems that consumers are facing from a variety of monopolizing manufacturers that restrict independent repair and repair by consumers through product designs that complicate or prevent repair, unavailability of parts and repair information, designs that make independent repairs less safe, policies or statements that steer consumers to manufacturer repair networks, an application of patent rights and enforcement of trademarks, software locks, firmware updates. In other words, they're starting to see the issues that are being created. You know, the sad part is, if the independent automotive repair shop, and I admit it, I'm one of those guys, and I'm coming to the end of the game, no time soon, I hope, because I enjoy too much, I'm having too much fun fixing cars, and I'm going to keep going as long as the big guy lets me. And the point becomes, if independent repair shops like myself and like so many of those out there were gone, you wouldn't be able to get your car fixed. because there's just no way the dealer network could support the volume of vehicles that will need repair. I've had cases where family vehicles are going into dealerships under warranty, and it's a three-week wait to get an appointment because they're backlogged. And you sit there and I say to myself, and sometimes, you know what? It's auto repair is like dating. Sometimes dating that next girl teaches you that you're better off where you are. The grass isn't always greener, as I like to say. But auto repair is just a very complicated, involved process. I would think the manufacturers would get more provided they share the information at a level that everybody can relate to and make work and improve their product image in the aftermarket, and not so much that they're the bad guys. More to come from the FTC. Good job, guys. I'm glad you're on top of the right to repair. That wraps it up for this week. Till the next time, I'm Ron Anning, the Car Doctor, reminding you, this time like every time, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.